This season on Burying It All with Call Me Adam, I am highlighting my entertainment idols. And today, I am going back in time and behind the curtain to bring you this blast from the past.
Hey everybody, it's Adam, live and in person for you. Hey everybody, it's Adam. Wonder who he'll interview.
In 2017, I got to interview singer-songwriter Lisa Loeb, just as she was getting ready to release her family album, Lullaby Girl. I got to conduct a phone interview with her, and I am so excited to share this conversation with you. And here's a behind-the-curtain story. The first few moments of our interview did not record. I didn't realize I wasn't recording the interview until I looked at my phone, and in a moment of panic, I just pressed record and didn't stop the interview. So that is why we start this episode a few minutes into Lisa answering my first question of who or what inspired her to become a singer and songwriter.
I always had music around, and I also had access to sometimes to choosing my own music, whether it was picking out a record I wanted to hear or picking a radio station. So there was a lot of sort of involvement in music. Mm-hmm. And then, like a lot of other kids, I started taking piano lessons when I was 6 or 7 years old. And I started writing music back then.
Wow.
I just think there's something when you're writing music or singing other people's music, there's something you go into this other dimension of expression and feeling and interpretation that is not the same as when you are, I don't know, it's just like a whole other dimension.
Mm.
And I just like being there. It's like being in a zone. You know, people get in that zone sometimes when they're riding a bike or reading a book or mm-hmm. meditating. And it's just interesting to be able to get into that zone. Also, music is more dimensional. Like as a kid, I loved doing musical theater, either on stage or with my friends for fun. It was fun to learn the music to the popular songs at the time. Uh-huh. There's so many other dimensions to music than just one.
Yes, yes. Well, you've been doing it well for your whole career, so.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And since you mentioned musical theater, I hope one day on your plan is to come to Broadway and do a show.
I would love it. I know. We're always sort of talking about it and figuring out if there's an opportunity there and figuring out how to make that happen, because that would be really exciting. That's like a dream come true. I mean, I know on my newest record that's coming out, I recorded the song Tomorrow from Annie, and I just loved what's growing up, and it's fun to sing and dance, and it'd be fun to be in a musical.
Yes, it would be terrific. Well, speaking of your new album, which is coming out in October, Lullaby Girl, it's a collection of classic songs from a variety of genres. What do you like recording about children's music or making music that can be shared by children and adults?
Well, it's funny. With this record, it's the least kind of kid record we've made. In fact, somebody mm-hmm. was asking when we were figuring out promoting the record what was the focus track for kids, and it's sort of impossible to figure out because there was really no kids and grown-ups in it. It was just songs that I loved growing up and a couple of originals too. So I think traditionally for my other records, that are kids' records, I think we write songs or choose songs that have sort of a different element about them than grown-up songs. Like they're not always about relationships and stuff like that and in a traditional romantic relationship way. It's more about experiences, and there's just a more colorful, vivid element to the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I tend to do a little bit more experimenting with different styles. I don't know why. When I do family style music, but again, with this newest record, we were working with standards, whether it's Ooh Child or a musical theater song or Dream a Little Dream of Me or a Fleetwood Mac song. It's standards. And I think when I was a kid, there was some kids' stuff and grown-up stuff, but kids were just expected to live in the grown-up world.
Mm.
Not in a bad way, but just there was a little bit more sophistication, humor, and silliness, but not in a kid-centered way.
Yeah.
But I think it still appealed to kids, and that's sort of what I continue to try to do with my music, and I think that's what is going on with the newest record.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you did a great job of taking a lot of these songs and making them into more acoustic or lullaby songs. I mean, especially like with Be My Baby and Don't Stop, the Fleetwood Mac song. What was the biggest challenge in stripping down these songs from their original versions?
Before we get to that answer, let's take a quick break and get a word in from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in a minute. Here is a behind-the-curtain story I'd like to share with you. For the past 2 years, I have been part of an entrepreneurial community called My Sexy Business. Through one of their most amazing masterminds, Groundwork Brigade, I have been discovering how to have a business that I own and doesn't own me. From strategy and planning, to implementation, to social media and simple tech solutions, I get personal assistance while being in a group setting. Every week is a new adventure that I love being on. I am so passionate about Groundwork Brigade Mastermind that I want everyone to know about it. That's why I decided to become an affiliate for them. If you have dreamed of starting your own business and didn't want to do it alone, come talk to me to see if the My Sexy Business Groundwork Brigade Mastermind community would be your flavor. You can reach me at callmeadamnyc@gmail.com. Welcome back to Bearing It All with Call Me Adam. So as you were saying.
Well, it was less about stripping down and more about reinterpreting.
Mm.
They're actually full band performances with layering of different instruments. It's piano and drums and different keyboards and organs and guitars and ukuleles. So we were trying specifically to do a lullaby record. Mm-hmm. And that meant finding tones in the instruments that had something that was kind of moody or with songs that were like the most familiar, like Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We really needed to do something different and give it a different rhythmic feel.
Yeah.
That made it feel a little bit like you're whistling, walking down the street in a kind of sunny place.
Mm-hmm.
Each song had a different, we interpreted it in a different way, but tried to be true to the song and the original arrangements. Sometimes we'd pick up different rhythmic figures or melodies or elements of the original recording and play them on different instruments. It was more about reinterpreting so that it felt like it was in this pre-dream, pre-nap space. But it really varies because something like Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow is more upbeat and brisk sounding, whereas something like All the Pretty Little Horses sounds very haunting and worldly sounding and meditative. As we looked at the big picture of all the different songs we were doing, we were trying to approach them from different angles so that the audience can go to different places but still be in that world of lullaby and whatever that means to them. And even when we created new songs, I think because of the musicians involved, Larry Goldings and Adam Levy in particular, they're really great musicians. And to me, I always think of Larry as a jazz musician.
Mm.
And we did Life is Just a Bowl of Cherries in a really classic standard way years ago. And I think also initially when we approached the record, I thought maybe we would do a whole record like that. But as we got into it, Larry is also an accomplished organ player and celeste player and all these other instruments. So it was taking the musician's skills and talents and ability to play different instruments and reinterpreting the songs without ruining them. We wanted versions that we thought were interesting. Every once in a while, there's a song, whether it's Be My Baby, which is the first song where you hear this. It's like a retro synthesizer from a long time ago before synthesizers were even around. It's off with this interesting pattern, and then I start singing, and then you realize what the song is. You get that aha moment. Other songs we tried to interpret really directly because we felt like that represented the song best, like Dream a Little Dream, for example.
Yes. Yeah, in listening to the album, it did take me a little bit to be like, oh yeah, I do know this song. But
yeah.
I love the way you arranged it and you approach it, and you really do make these songs your own. I always am very impressed by artists who can reinterpret such a popular song and really make it feel like it's their own. And I think you do a great job.
Yeah, it can
job.
Be a little daunting.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
And then there were other songs that, you know, there's many layers and many reasons different songs are on the record, and that also played into how they were interpreted. Like, we really wanted to do the Cinderella song, A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes, in a sort of true to form. It's sort of modern, but I tried to pick up a little element of the way the original was sung back when Cinderella came out. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of that dark, magical place that Disney likes to go to.
Yeah.
For Ooh Child, again, we worked with making sure that it didn't get too sleepy, even though it was supposed to be a lullaby. And we picked up in the rhythm track some percussion and drum element that Jay played with. Again, it subdivides it so you get that nice like R&B driving beat, even though it's suited for a lullaby. Again, we just try to have a lot of variety and really take advantage of the musical abilities of the band. And even the Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow, it was funny, we recorded it one way, and I sat with it for a while, and I thought, you know what, we got to do this again. So we ended up recording it live with keyboard and vocal, and it just really came together. In a way, it's like less sleepy and more just intimate feeling, the whole record, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, I would agree with that. I also think your original songs, Lullaby Girl and Close Your Eyes, just fit so well into this album. And in listening to the album in its entirety, I had to stop and really be like, oh, wait a minute, this is Lisa's original song. And you did such a great job of making them seem just like, if you're not paying attention, if you have it on in the background, you have to stop to really pay attention and be like, this is not a cover, it's the one she wrote for the album.
Oh, great, thank you. Yeah. Good to hear it. That was our intent.
Oh, good. Good. Well, it works.
Great. Actually, Lullaby Girl was a song I wrote with my friend Cliff. I was visiting in Nashville, and it was my first day out of a quick trip to Nashville, and it was in the evening, and I'd never seen a studio, so I went to go check out a studio, and it was like late at night, so I called to wish my daughter to tell her goodnight, and I hung up the phone, and it was just really late, but both Cliff and I said, well, we're in Nashville, we should write a song. So I hung up the phone with my sweet daughter, and we decided to write a song inspired by that moment, and that was Lullaby Girl.
Did you write Lullaby Girl and Close Your Eyes first and then center the other songs around it? Or was the sound of the album of what you were going for in your process first and then you wrote these songs to fit that?
We wrote Close Your Eyes while we were in the middle of choosing songs for the record. We weren't sure how many covers and how many original songs would be there.
Uh-huh.
So we started with starting to choose the songs, and then we talked a lot about which songs and what they might sound like. And then in the middle of that, my collaborators, Larry and Rich and I, wrote the song Close Your Eyes. And we did want something that would fit instrumentally with what we thought was going to be this group of musicians that we knew were going to play with us, Adam and drums and either guitar or ukulele, and just like a classic jazz combo, basically, but without it being jazzy. You know, standards kind of combo based in piano more than anything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we thought of that, and then we were about to start writing another song, and I said, I feel like I've written a couple of other lullabies randomly. And so I started looking back in my catalog, and I had a couple of songs. And the one that really fit was Lullaby Girl. It was perfect for it. It's a little more modern than some of the songs on the record, but I feel like with the placement after All the Pretty Little Horses, it picks up on that classic singer-songwriter feel. That was the other thing that was important. We were really thinking about, in a more general way, what this record would sound like. And that's when Rich and I went to Larry, because I'd worked with Larry before on that standard, Life is Just a Bowl of Cherries. And Rich and I have made a lot of records together. We've been making like a record a year, plus music for TV and a bunch of other special projects and songs. And we said, you know, it'd be really cool to do a piano-centered record. And Larry would be the guy. And so that sort of helped determine which songs were going to be the most important ones. Of course, once we started working with Larry, he was like, well, we should do some that's more guitar-centered and something should be more ukulele-centered. Mm. So it became a collaboration. But initially, it was really, let's do something that sounds really different, that's more piano-based. The way we recorded was mostly live, which brings out a different quality and intimacy to the vocal.
Yes.
I found when I play live, as opposed to sometimes in pop production, in pop music production, you start layering and layering and fixing and fixing and making things perfect. And with this, we have really high standards, but we tried to allow for some human error to make it feel real.
Yes. Oh, that's so interesting to hear that side of it in the recording.
In my past recordings, I had a handful of songs that the vocals were recorded mostly live while the band was playing, and those just have a different quality, and I really prefer that, and I've been doing that a lot in my family music, and I'll continue to do that in my non-family music because I play live a lot, and I just enjoy that about when I hear other people's recordings, and I want to continue to do that, and that we really got to do it on this record.
Going back a little bit, in 2003 was the first time you released a children's album, So at that time, what made you want to move into children's music as opposed to just continuing with pop music?
Before we get to that answer, let's take a quick break and get a word in from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in a minute. Oh, wait. You don't know? You haven't heard? You must not be subscribed to the Call Me Adam Digest. When you sign up for the Call Me Adam Digest, you are the first to know. You get a front row seat to my interviews and podcast episodes where you get to discover new things about your favorite celebrities. You get personal stories from the other side of the microphone that you wouldn't know by just reading, watching, or listening to my interviews. We get to have a weekly connection, and you can add some fun to your weekend. So come take a peek behind the curtain with the Call Me Adam Digest. Sign up today at callmeadam.com. Can't wait to see you there. Welcome back to Burying It All with Call Me Adam. So as you were saying.
I think it's because I just had, at that time, I think it was inspired by my love, and I say this a lot, you've probably read it in my press releases because mm-hmm. it's true. I just had such a love for a handful of kids' things when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I am really sentimental. There were certain records and things I listened to, a lot of grown-up stuff, like the Mamas and the Papas and Led Zeppelin and classical music and musical theater and just all kinds of things from a very, very young age. Mm-hmm. But there were a handful of kids' records, and they cracked me up and it spoke to my heart, like Free to Be You and Me and Really Rosie by Carole King. It was more about capturing my childhood than performing for children. So I just wanted to do that. And as I've gone along, that's really what it's been. More about me sharing my childhood and less about making music for kids. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I think grown-ups who've got like an attachment to their own childhood probably might connect to it better sometimes than kids do.
Yes. And I'm still listening to Really Rosie.
Yeah, I love it. It's almost like it's got that musical theater element in that it's kind of ageless, mm-hmm. but it can be silly. Like you listen to the musical Grease and you sing along every word.
Yes.
After I made Catch the Moon, which was my first kids record, moved to doing summer camp songs, which again, it's more mm-hmm. about sharing my childhood and reminiscing, which to me feels very present. It doesn't feel like, oh, that was then, this is now. It's more like, oh my God, isn't this cool? Like it's so much fun to share.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's an element of that when I make kids music. And so I went from summer camp songs and developed that further when I did books that go with a couple of the kids camp songs. And I did two kids books with music, which again was a lot of summer camp sing-along songs. To me, that was more about just the songs that I love from when I'm a kid. And I still sing them for fun as opposed to I'm making music for kids. There was some attention to things just like thinking about what themes are important for growing up, just like mm-hmm. the themes that I loved paying attention to even as a kid. Like when Free to Be You and Me was singing about equality, or Really Rosie and I Don't Care, the song Pierre, is singing mm-hmm. about manners, basically. I knew I was being preached to, but it was still really fun
yes.
to hear how they develop those stories and those melodies and all that. So I keep trying to do that. So I did mm-hmm. summer camp and did a summer camp musical. And then finally I did do one really kid record, which is my nursery rhymes record.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I realized after performing years and years in front of kids that even though I liked singing fun, interesting songs that grown-ups will enjoy, kids really like hearing the ABCs. Kids really connect to the classic songs. Mm-hmm. And when I went out to look for, again, my own sentimental connection to really simple recordings like Burl Ives, there were not a lot of simple recordings of nursery rhymes for kids.
Mm.
They were really produced and trying to be cute and interesting, and it just wasn't simple enough. So I made a really vast, intimate, and simple recordings of over 30 songs for kids to doing what I like to do, which is being sentimental again. And I made my record Feel What You Feel, and now this record.
I love it. I just want to go back to, I have to ask you about Stay. This past May, Stay celebrated its 23rd anniversary.
Can you believe it?
I can't. I mean, it really feels like just yesterday that it came out.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Looking back over your career and your life these past 23 years, and since Stay was on Reality Bites, is there a moment in time where you said to yourself, Reality Bites, like it just really stinks?
I definitely think there's challenges with the direction the music industry is going for musicians, for listeners, it's awesome. We can get any song anytime we want on all these different apps that we have. My mom used to have to drive me to some weird part of town to find albums and songs and search for things. And now you just push a button and it's right there.
Yeah.
So for listeners, it's great. For musicians, it's tough, though, because a lot of income goes away. And so that's a little bit strange and stressful. It wasn't what we all expected. When you do this for a long time, you get really good royalties and, you know, checks come in. But when people start getting everything for free, the checks aren't coming in. And so it makes it hard to do the job if it's not paying for itself. So I think at most industries are taking a hit in that way. You know, budgets are down all over the place for everything.
Yes.
But I think that's the most stressful. When you love what you're doing, there's an audience for it out there. I play lots of concerts and it's a great audience. It's just, it's frustrating that so many musicians, including myself, have to think about how is this a business? How does this work?
Right, right. And I used to do stand-up comedy for a little while, and I never got above the bringer level, but it got to a point where I had to worry more about, oh, do I have enough people coming to see me than focusing on the material, and I ended up just stopping. If
yeah,
you have to focus too much on the business side and you can't enjoy the fun of it, it makes it harder.
I mean, I think any artist or entrepreneur will always have to be concerned with the business side of things,
yes.
But I just feel like the break point has changed, especially now that it's such a do-it-yourself world.
Yeah.
I think it's always important. I know I've always been really involved in hands-on, love connecting with fans and stuff like that, but the balance has shifted a lot, and it's too bad because I think it's great to connect with fans and have access to musicians and other people that we love watching and listening to, but we need a little more mystery. Creative people need more time to create and less to create networking.
Yes, I agree. In your song, The Way It Really Is, you sing, maybe what if it could be the way I wish it really was? Maybe I don't want to see the way it really is. What is something that you did not want to see the way it really is?
I think it's mostly relationship situations. I've been in relationships where I ignore the signs immediately of what's not working. You know, they always say when you break up, the reason you break up was the reason in the beginning you knew you were going to break up.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So I think that's mostly it, just ignoring the really blatant signs. Mm. And you look back and you say, ugh, I knew that.
Yes. That happens a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't change people, really.
No. No, you can't. I'll just do a few more questions since I know you have to go. If you could invite four people to have cake and pie with you, who would you invite and what kind of cake and pie would you have?
Wow, that is a hard question. I'm never good at this, narrowing down to just a few people to hang out with. I think Elton John would be good. He's really nice and interesting and talented. Patton Oswalt is really fun. And I would just say my four best friends. I mean, I have a lot of close friends, but my husband and three of my best friends. And I would have yellow cake with very thin layer of chocolate frosting and cherry pie from Earth Cafe, which is mostly cherries and then really good crust on the bottom and the top. Those are two of the things I would have.
That sounds delicious.
Yes, it is delicious. Oh, and sprinkles on the cake, too, I like.
Oh, I love sprinkles. Sprinkles on everything.
If
this was your last day on Earth, what would you want to do that you haven't done yet?
Well, I wouldn't say that I haven't done, but I would love to go to the Caribbean and put my feet in that water and with that sand. I love that white sand and that bathtub water that's that turquoise blue.
Yes.
I love that. So nice.
And very relaxing.
Yes.
Do you have time for like three more quick questions?
Yes.
Okay. So I have a segment called I Can See Clearly Now, where I like to clear up any misconceptions out there. So what do you feel is the biggest misconception out there about yourself that you'd like to set the record straight?
Probably people might think that I'm kind of quiet and timid.
Mm-hmm.
I think because I was so emotional in my video for Stay, and I'm a small person, but I'm not quiet. Well, I can be quiet, but I'm kind of an outspoken business person who's not so quiet.
Yes, I love that. And I also have a section on my site called 1% Better, where I try to encourage people to improve their life by 1% better every day. What is something in your life that you want to improve by 1% better every day?
Sleeping. It's always on my mind, and I do things every day to try to make it better, like set alarms for myself, tell my family. But I think it's important to sleep, so I would say sleep. Sleep more and sleep better.
That is a good one. We all need that.
Yeah, we do.
And my last question is, what is a quirk about yourself that your friends would make fun of you for?
When I was a kid, they used to make sort of make fun of me for my love of David Bowie and certain songs. I was such an audiophile. Certain music I loved so much, I would get so excited. I'd be like, guys, listen to this song by David Bowie. It's called Bewley Brothers. But every time I would talk to them about a couple of tracks from the Hunky Dory record, they like to kind of poke fun of me.
I love that. Well, that's all the questions I'll ask because I know you have to go. I thank you so much for your time. And,
thank you.
He'll get the dirt and the scoop and the story, for he happens to be in the know. Just ask anybody who's Adam. Adam lives for the business of show. Call me Adam.com.